The title for this evening is Profiles of Faith. I was thinking of that title. I was thinking of our late president, John F. Kennedy, who wrote a book, Profiles of Courage. Remember that one? Don't remember that one. Preacher Shav, remember that one? During our time, Profiles of Courage. I'm not that old. One of the qualities of a Kshatriya is chivalrous, courageous. When there's some danger, they rise to the occasion and are inspired and sometimes get smashed, but sometimes. Stand for principle, even if there's risk, because take courage to do that. So as that great president, depending on your opinion of what greatness is, became inspired by the lives of different persons who exemplified for him, at least, courage. Similarly, but transcendentally, one of the teachings of Ramanujacharya is for the development of qualities that one may wish to develop. It's a nice teaching, and it's very practical and very effective. Consider great souls, great personalities of previous times who had that quality in some inspiring, super excellent way. And then focus attention upon that person or a few persons of such exalted character. And hear about them, remember them, glorify them, pray to them in this way, you know, etc. In this way, associate with them, and by associating with them in this way, their qualities become decorated upon you. If you want to develop good qualities, that's a system that he recommends. So similarly, faith, we've been discussing this the whole weekend, is just going back to the introductory theme, faith is essential. It's fundamental to begin bhakti, and it's fundamental throughout each of the stages of bhakti. It's not just a limb of bhakti or a stage of bhakti. It permeates and is essential. Of course, one might say, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says the same thing about sadhu sangha. In order for that faith to become awakened or strengthened in the direction of bhakti, one needs sadhu sangha. And then he goes on to tell Sanatana Goswami, it's not just in the beginning stage, but all the way through up to the stage of perfection, where it requires sadhu sangha. It's essential, not dispensable or optional, essential. So, as Ramanujacharya taught, maybe you can think of some of the great heroes for you that exemplified strong faith and practically, there's so many. You know, each of the nine, each of the nine angas of bhakti have someone that represents those who achieve perfection, and you could make that list, and we could spend the evening just discussing those nine. Or the 12 Mahajans and their impeccable faith and, the process of devotional service. or certain personalities that you know of in contemporary life? We certainly could speak of Srila Prabhupada as one who had implicit faith in the instructions of his spiritual master and executed Mission Impossible in such a glorious way. I remember one time, in an informal discussion, Prabhupada was saying, he was describing a little bit what he endured when he first came. He wasn't patting himself on the back, he was just letting us know. With a punchline at the end, he said, "You would never have been able to survive." Why? He had faith in the instructions of his spiritual master. He another time said, "Even if I went back empty-handed, I knew that I had given my all and all with faith in the instruction of my spiritual master." So the effort itself was the perfection, not simply the result of the effort was its perfection. But because of that faith, according to Bhakti Sandarbha Jiva Goswami's writings, it's the specific sankalpa, the intention, that animates and focuses one's faith on a particular, whatever it is, something. So for the life of devotion to Krishna, our teaching is this faith in the instructions of the spiritual master, perfectly exemplified by Srila Prabhupada. So I'm just going to go through profiles of faith. Where to begin and where to end, there's so many. But similar to Srila Prabhupada, when Narada is describing in Canto 1, Chapter 6, he's describing his previous life before he was Narada. And he had certain qualifications, and he had association with saintly devotees, and therefore he was able to receive from them something most wonderful. Instructions in the process of devotion, and a mantra for him to chant, and they showed special mercy upon him. And he received very enthusiastically that special mercy he describes, minus the detail. Months, it was just 4 months. How long have we had association of devotees? Maybe a little bit more than 4 months. 44 years. Or whatever the number of years, it's others in this room. He had 4 months. And then the sadhus left. Of course, you could say, well, he had 4 interrupted months, day and night, night and day, and I never had that. In any case, they left. And then shortly after they left, his mother left. Narada explains, she had gone to the well to gather water. When she came back, she was bitten by a poisonous snake and died. So here's this little boy. No father, no mother. He didn't say he, you know, sat down in a heap and started crying, like we probably would do, or most little boys would probably do. He immediately just accepted this is some arrangement of providence. And he took it as an opportunity, and he carried on with the instructions, because that's all he had shelter of, was the instructions of those Bhaktivedantas. And he went here and there and experienced the world. Forests and cities and villages and mountains and here and there, hill and valley. But every morning, every evening, he did his devotional practice. And before too long, the Supreme Lord appeared in his heart and then spoke to him. So it took, to do what Narada did took faith, and the reciprocation with the faith that he had was the Lord appeared. Although Lord Vishnu normally, until the perfectly qualified, don't appear, but I appeared early for you, just to encourage you, so that you would continue on this path. And he instructed him, and he took shelter of the instruction. Continue like this for the rest of your life, and at the end of this life, you'll come to me. So he had faith in those words. And that's what he did. And that's what happened. At the end of his life, he describes, he gave up his mortal coil, he gave up his body, and simultaneously, as lightning and illumination occurs simultaneously, he manifested his spiritual form. It doesn't give the details of what growing up without mother and father was like, but that's what he did. Just taking full faith in the instructions. Or another glorious example, there's so many, another glorious example is Maharaj Parikshit, which he perfected by hearing. The verse that we read, discussed the first evening was Krishna speaking to Uddhava about one who somehow or other, right, Yadrishchaya, achieves the association of a saintly person and in that association develops strong faith in Matkatasu, in hearing topics about me. And Prabhupada elaborates drama, kirtan, stories, narrations about Krishna. One who develops somehow or other that faith through that association develops, he'll go back to Godhead. He'll achieve spiritual perfection in due course of time. So that was Maharaj Parikshit. He had reason to have faith in the personality of Godhead, but when calamity comes, that tests everybody. And it was a calamity. He was cursed to die in 7 days. 7 days. You know, some people get diagnosed with some critical disease, what to speak of a terminal disease. Imagine. I mean, one day we'll hear from the doctor or something. You know, unless we're already gone before the doctor pronounces it. So what's going to enter the heart when that sound vibration comes in the ear? So Maharaj Parikshit just accepted it as the Lord's plan and renounced his kingdom, went to the bank of the sacred river, Ganges, sat down, waited the death, called all the sages to come, and when the sages came, he pronounced his fearlessness, but due to his faith in the process of hearing, that in the association of such saintly persons as you, I will hear Krishna Katha, so please go on speaking Krishna Katha. And if I have to take birth again, then let me have unflinching devotion to the Supreme Lord and the association of devotees so the topics of the Lord can be heard and a friendly disposition towards all living entities. He had great faith, and similarly when the whole Bhagavatam is narrated, completely fixed. Let that mystical snake bird or whatever it is bite me now, because my mind is fixed and I'm going back to Godhead. Hari Bol, let me go. Or Shukadeva Goswami, who achieved perfection by speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. He was Brahman real. We know this, so it's just sharing some appreciation. He was Brahman realized before he was even born. Who has that qualification? Answer, nobody. But Shukadev Goswami was so fixed in Brahman realization, he was considering inside the womb, outside the womb, what does it matter? It's all one. And outside the womb, there's all this Maya, so I'll just stay in the womb. I don't want to fall prey to Maya. That's what the scripture tells us. For 16 years, those of you who are mothers, 16 years, as they say these days, OMG. Poor mother. So what was Vyasadeva to do? He went and asked Krishna what to do. And Krishna came and gave his word. Hey, Shukadeva, come on out. I promise you, you'll not fall prey to Maya. Okay, I'll come out. He had faith in Krishna's words. And Krishna kept his word. And simply by singing the praises of Krishna, he was all had come to the bank of the Ganges to see the departure of Maharaj Pariksit. They all accepted him. It was amazing. He didn't even exhibit his qualification. He didn't even speak. But just to see him, they all stood in honor and gave him the seat of honor. And he didn't even say anything yet. How exalted was Shukadeva Goswami? So how does that happen? When devotion is pure, and devotion becomes fully pure, when there's full faith, implicit faith. This is such a nice topic. I really like this topic. So now maybe one that's a little more indirect or obscure. King Indradumna, who became an elephant cursed by Agastya Muni for no good reason. He was in like the sage that Maharaj Pariksit strung the garland, this dead snake around his neck. Indradumna was in meditation, complete absorption in meditation and trance. And Agastya Muni got ticked off for not receiving him properly. So he cursed him. What kind of manners are you made up of? You're as dull as an elephant. I curse you, you become an elephant. He became an elephant. How'd you like to hear that from Agastya Muni? So, when he was in danger, after 100 years of battle with the crocodile, we discussed this already, he recognized, I'm finished. And when people, humans, realize they're finished, they suddenly become very religious, at least for a little while. I'm not sure I've got it right, but I've heard there's a saying in the army, looking at Nanda Kishore, maybe you've heard this one before. In the foxholes, there's no atheists. Something like that? So, meaning, when, you know, the military people are fighting against other people and they're like in a trench and there's this mound of dirt and bullets are coming. Everyone's praying to God on both sides. Afterwards, they may forget, but when that great danger is there, there's no atheists to be found anywhere. Everyone's praying and praying. When danger is there, we turn to God. It's natural. So Gajendra turned to God. meaning from within, as Super Soul, the Supreme Lord, prompted him to remember his previous life as a king. And he began reciting these wonderful prayers that he regularly recited as a king, just like we regularly recite Nisringa prayers, for example, because Prabhupada mentions them specifically. Or our Brahma Samhita prayers we recite regularly. Not as regularly. We could. So Prabhupada says, as King Indradumna did, we should also do, because even if you become an animal in your next life, there may be the opportunity to remember from your previous life absorption, sincere, heartfelt absorption and standard prayers. So he recited those standard prayers. And as he was going through the standard prayers, there's a certain point his prayers were replaced with spontaneous prayers. Essentially, the spontaneous prayers were recognizing, I don't have to worry about this alligator on my leg because I know the Supreme Lord is my protector. We discussed this with Gop Tritve Varanam. The Lord is my protector, so he'll make the arrangement, whatever it is, I don't know. I can't do it on my own, but he'll make some arrangement. So when I'm free from this situation of this danger, this alligator, my real prayer is, please keep me always engaged in your devotional service. Please protect me from Maya, the illusory conception of life. I want to be with you in your service. And with that faith that awakened, yes, it was prompted by danger. That's okay. Let a little danger happen in your life, my dear devotees, and see what happens. Take sincere shelter of Krishna. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, not exactly danger, but Lord Chaitanya, wonderful Leela. It's a long narration, which I'll make shorter. But the situation that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put Sanatan Goswami in. Most of you know the pastime. Sanatan Goswami, under the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, had taken up his residence in Vrindavan. And after some time, permission had been given, you may come and see me in Puri. So Sanatana Goswami was super scholar, and so he had found out where all the places that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had visited on his way from Puri to Vrindavan and Vrindavan back to Puri. His plan, those places, including in the Jharikhand forest where tribal people would live and visit those little villages of those tribal people and hear from them about what Lord Chaitanya did and said as he passed through Jharikhand forest and gave his association to them. So devoted to Lord Chaitanya. So in the course of travel through the Jharikhand forest, he did something that all of you, when you go to India, should very carefully avoid. He drank water from a not proper place. One of our residents of Vrindavan, I won't mention their name, said even when you buy Bisleri bottles, make sure the cap is secure before you buy it, because some people take Bisleri bottles, fill it with garbage water, and put the cap back on and sell it. Then people drink the water and get sick. Anyway, that's anecdotal. So he was passing through Jharikhand forest, and he drank water from a place that the water was such that he contracted a disease just from drinking the water. And the nature of the disease was sores on his skin that gave off pus. Prabhupada was, I remember one time he was narrating the story, he said, what do you call that? Anyway, he was searching for weeping sores, weeping I guess it's some kind of medical term. Water comes out. Yes? It's a medical term? Weeping. You know, like when you cry, water comes out. Sores that are when water comes out. So that, and very itchy. But if you scratch it, the more yucky stuff comes out. And so as he came traveling of his body, he began thinking, this is awful. Because I know what's going to happen. Lord Chaitanya is so affectionate. He'll want to embrace me. And when he embraces me, the smelly, yucky stuff will smear all over his body. What am I going to do? And he was in anxiety, big anxiety. He finally came up with a little plan in the course of his long journey, walking. The plan was he would stay up until Jagannath Rath Yatra. When the cart was passing, he'd throw himself beneath the cart of Lord Jagannath, have his body crushed before Lord Jagannath gave up his body, and the problem would be over. But it's not so simple. And then the problem is over. Lord Chaitanya, without saying anything, and Sanatan Goswami, without sharing with others what he had been contemplating, Lord Chaitanya confronted him one day and said, You can't give up your body. If giving up your body was as easy as that, to go back to Godhead, we'd all do it. But you can't go back to Godhead that way. And besides, you've given this body to me. You've surrendered to me. So this body belongs to me. You can't take the property of another. You've already given it to me. You can't take it back and do with it what you like. So he couldn't give up his body, throwing his body under the cart of Jagannath. So then he consulted one young sannyasi, very intimate associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jagatananda Pandit was his name. And very young, and Sanatana Goswami is like his father, but Jagatananda was very dear to Lord Chaitanya, so he was discussing this dilemma, what to do. And together they came up with this idea that he would attend Rath Yatra, and after Rath Yatra, then quickly go back to Vrindavan. So he wouldn't, you know, spread this yucky, smelly stuff all over Lord Chaitanya's body when he embraced him. So word got back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that this was Sanatana Goswami's plan. And he scolded Jagatananda, what kind of impudent, foolish young boy you are. Sanatana Goswami is your elder, like your spiritual master, and you're instructing him? He chastised him severely. And then again, went to Sanatana Goswami, said, you can't leave unless I instruct you to leave. So he can't give up his body, and he can't leave. And he can't stay. So what to do? Like Haridas Thakur, Sanatana Goswami, being by nature very, very humble, as I mentioned, one of the outstanding qualities of Lord Chaitanya's associates is abject humility and at the same time great eagerness for Krishna Bhakti, Krishna's association. So he never entered the temple of Jagannath, like Haridas didn't. Because although he was born in a Brahmin family, and most exalted of all Vaishnavas, senior most of all the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he considered himself unfit to enter the temple. Because he, in earlier stage of his life, had accepted service in the government of Nawab Hussein Shah. So for that he was unqualified to enter the temple. He didn't enter the temple. But he stayed with Haridas. So Lord Chaitanya would come every day and give his association to both of them. And when he approached, Lord Chaitanya approached, Sanatana Goswami very quickly stepped back because he knew Lord Chaitanya would want to embrace him. And Lord Chaitanya said, why are you doing this? He said, please don't touch me. This body is so contaminated. And Lord Chaitanya said, like a mother with her small baby, the baby makes so many messes. And the mother loves the small baby. She embraces the baby and cleans the baby because of her affection for the baby. So you're like that. My love for you is such that I want to embrace you. Please allow me. No, please don't touch me. And Lord Chaitanya forcibly embraced him, caught him by the hand and forcibly embraced him. And the sores went away. Miracle cure. We can make a whole religion just on that. Haridas Thakur was observing the whole thing and said, just see how much love Lord Chaitanya has for you. He personally put you into this predicament where you contracted the disease, you couldn't cover up your body, you couldn't leave Vrindavan, and you couldn't stay in Vrindavan. And then he cured you. He took away all other shelters but one, his embrace. And then he embraced you. And then the problem went away. You're so dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You are the greatest recipient of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. You are the most exalted of all Vaishnavas. And what did Sanatan Goswami do? Bury his head in the sand and say, no, 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 no. He didn't do that. He said, Haridas, it's you who are the most exalted associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Some persons are good in their conduct, their achar, but not so good in their prachar. They don't give their compassion so easily to others. And some give compassion a lot, but their conduct is not so good. We know some people in both categories. But you, Haridas, you're perfect in both. You're the most exalted associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Didn't say what Haridas said back, but just... So Sanatana Goswami was completely bound, you could say he was bound by the love of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he was bound by the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and had full faith in the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Never would he consider anything else. He thought of this possibility, that possibility, but he was checkmated. Because Lord Chaitanya had a transcendental purpose for him. Exclusive shelter. Nothing but shelter under his lotus feet. Which is what Sanatana Goswami wanted. So he achieved that in a most amazing way. Some of you have been to Vrindavan. How many haven't been to Vrindavan? May you all one day go to Vrindavan. And when you do, go with nice devotees. Don't go alone. Go and spend not just, you know, a day and a half and ride a taxi around Govardhan Hill or one of those things. Spend some days in the association of devotees. Just before coming here, Thursday was that nice wedding in Alachua. And it was really nice. And this side of the side was Dina Bandhu Prabhu. And then Radhanath Maharaj and Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj and several other devotees, wonderful devotees. So when Dina Bandhu and Indradumna Maharaj saw each other, because as usual, Dina Bandhu came a little late. Anybody that's had his association knows that about him. He doesn't come on time. He comes a little late. They warmly embraced, and Indradumna Maharaj said, he is my Vrindavan Parikrama Guru. And he said, I mean it. He's my Vrindavan Parikrama Guru. And because we had gone together, Indradumna Maharaj and I, and Vrindavan Parikrama a couple of times. We tried to work it out some other times, but our schedules didn't work. But all of us have had that association with Dina Bundu. And anyone who's been with Dina Bundu going around Govardhan Hill, you know what is one, if not the most, he just like jumps out of his skin practically when we go to a particular place. He loves describing Lota Babu. Govardhan Hill is shaped like a peacock. And at the very top, it runs in a north-south direction. At the very top is the head of the peacock with the two eyes, Radhakund and Shyamakund, at the top. And then this long, slender neck, and then kind of the bulging part of the peacock, like a peacock sitting on a branch. That's where Manasi Ganga is. And then the tail of the peacock hanging down, like that. So Govardhan is compared like a peacock. And at the very bottom of the tail of the peacock is called Punchari. Punchari means tail. And Punchari Lota Babu is the deity, the little temple of Lota Babu at the bow. And I can't tell the story like Dina Bundu can. So my apologies, but encourage you, when you go to Vrindavan, look up Dina Bundu. Go to Govardhan Hill with Dina Bundu and wait excitedly when you get to Lota Babu Temple and you hear the real story. He loves the story. I've probably heard it 20 times and it's like... Anyway. When Krishna was leaving Vrindavan, there's this wonderful, at the same time, tragic scene where Akura is taking Krishna and Balaram on Akura's chariot to Mathura. And that terrible scene where the gopis, their normal shyness is cast aside and they do everything they possibly can think of to stop Krishna from leaving. But Krishna starts to leave anyways, exhibiting one of his six opulences, the opulence of renunciation. And as he's leaving, along the path is one of his dear friends, Lota Babu. And Lota Babu pleads with Krishna, please don't go. Come to my home and have your lunch. And Krishna says, I must go now. There's some service for me. Akura is taking me. But I promise you, I'll come back. And Lota Babu says, no, don't leave. Please come to my home. I promise you I'll come back. I'll come back in 2 to 5 days. Just stay right here. Finally, Lota Babu doesn't have any option because Krishna leaves. So he stands there looking down the road, waiting for Krishna to come because Krishna promised he'd come back. But after the 2 to 5 days, Krishna hadn't come back. But he still stayed there looking down the road, waiting for Krishna to come back. And more days passed, and weeks passed, and months passed, and 5,000 years passed, and he's still standing there, waiting for Krishna to come back, because Krishna promised he would come back. He had full faith in Krishna's words. And when Krishna speaks in Brihad Bhagavatamrita to the queens of Dwarka, he says, I didn't go back because the only thing that was maintaining the lives of the gopis is my promise I would come back. And if I came back, then all of you here in Dwarka would be missing my association so much, I'd have to go back to you. And then the gopis would definitely give up their lives. So I haven't gone back. There's this long description of Balaram pleading with Krishna, insisting, you promised me. You told me you'd go back, and you went against your word. You can't do that. You're Krishna. You keep your word. You said, yes, I'll go back, but you didn't go back. So Krishna explained why. Because he didn't want the gopis to give up their lives. because they had faith that Krishna will come. So what does that mean? Krishna cheated them? That the transcendental answer is no. He entered because Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, right? You've all heard that. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So when he so-called left Vrindavan, he entered into the hearts of the gopis. Now Supersoul is already there, but different than Supersoul is Shyamasundara, you know, Krishna holding his flute, that Shyamasundara form, Govinda, Yasoda, Nandana, Krishna, within their heart. Because they were at this very exalted stage of Svarasaki, where they could actually see Krishna, and not only see Krishna, they could take part in Krishna's pastimes within their heart. Sanjaya, the narrator of Bhagavad Gita, Sanjaya Uvacha, that one. Sanjaya was given the power by Vyas, who was his spiritual master, that things were at a distant place he could see within his heart. Prabhupada called it transcendental television. It's one thing to see something like transcendental television. It's another thing to enter into the television tube and take part in what's on television. That's different. And the gopis had that qualification. But in the bhava, they were waiting for Krishna to return while they were associating with Krishna within their hearts. It's a deep mystery. So if you can't understand it, just keep chanting and purifying. And I wanted to end with something that I was thinking of when we were singing, or Sri Rupa was singing this song of Narottam Das Thakur. One of the ways to glorify a devotee is to glorify the devotees of that devotee. Just like followers of Srila Prabhupada, by your becoming elevated in Krishna consciousness, by so doing it glorifies our founder Acharya. So one of the great devotees of Narottam Das Thakur is, so well, stories are amazing, and he's a profile of faith. But that's not how it started out. It started out where he was just the opposite. He was, he had a brother, Chanda Roy had a brother whose name was Santosh. And they were sons of a Brahmin. And a Brahmin, not Vaishnav, but a Brahmin Shakti worshipper. And Chanda became deviated, as did his brother. They became like Jagai and Madhai. They were also Brahmin born, became very, 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 very bad. Chanda Roy became so bad, so sinful and murderous and wicked, that he became inhabited by a Brahma Rakshasa ghost. Now his father was certainly disturbed by Chanda Roy's behavior before, but inhabited by a Brahma Rakshasa ghost, he didn't know what to do. So one evening, his Devi, Bhavani, appeared to him in a dream. And he said, Bhavani said to him, I don't accept any of your worship, so-called worship. My Lord is Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva's Lord is Lord Vishnu. So if you want to rescue and save your son, Chanda Roy, you must worship Lord Vishnu. And his dream ended. Oh, and the way for you to get the position of access to the worship of Lord Vishnu is through Narottama Das Thakur. He lives in Keturi. Go there. He didn't. He hesitated. He went to physicians. The physicians didn't know anything, what to do. He went to an astrologer. The best of astrologers. He was a wealthy man. Best of astrologers in all the land. The astrologer told them the same thing that Bhavani said. There's only one thing that can rescue him. Your chart's very clear. He must become a worshiper of Vishnu. Because Vishnu is all powerful. Just like Dhruva. Dhruva wanted a kingdom. His mother said, Vishnu can do anything. The astrologer said the same thing. And the way for that to take place is Narottam Das Thakur. You must go. You take your sons to Narottam Das Thakur. So finally, he did that. Well, he didn't go. He sent a messenger. He wrote a letter to Narottam Das Thakur describing the circumstance and asking if he would give shelter to his ghostly occupied son. How inviting a letter would that be? I receive letters like that every now and then. Not quite like that. So Narottam Das was with Ramchandra Kaviraj. So he shared the letter with Ramchandra Kaviraj and asked his advice, what should I do? And he said, I think the Lord has a plan that you will rescue him somehow. And Narottam then went to a quiet place and chanted the holy name very deeply. And he received this inspiration from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that you should definitely go there, say yes to the messenger, and go there and give him Diksha, and give him the name Krishna meditation. That was what Lord Chaitanya instructed. So he did. And when he reached there, just by his coming into the place where Chanda Roy was and the Brahma Rakshasa, it immediately left the body of Chanda Roy, went into a high place in the top of a tree, and in a disembodied voice called down and said, because of my sinful activities, I've been forced to inhabit the body of this wicked person, Chanda Roy, but by your presence, I've been released from that unfortunate situation. I only have one request of you. Please let me take birth in my next life in Katuri Gram, which is none different than Vrindavan. And the ghost went away. And Chanda Roy and Santosh's father was so relieved. All three of them fell at the lotus feet of Narottam Das Thakur. Narottam said, go take your bath in the sacred river. And meanwhile, I'll have a yajna ceremony established, and I'll give all three of you initiation. Just like that. Not how initiations happen in ISKCON exactly, but that's what happened. And then the three accompanied Narottam Das Thakur back to Katuri. And there, at the lotus feet of Narottam, they heard Krishna Katha in detail, that the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the Srimad Bhagavatam's message as delivered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Goswami followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Narottam Das Thakur had learned all this of a Goswami who received all of that from Rupa Goswami, who received that directly from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So after some time, the two brothers and father went back to their home place. And in their home place, this wicked, abominable, dacoit, rascal person was now exhibiting saintly quality. So the local qazi was really disturbed. He's becoming famous. I have to check this person. So he considered what to do. And first he considered just killing him. He said, no, if he gets killed in this circumstance, according to our religion, he'll go to heaven, so that's not good. So then he came up another plan. The other plan was he buried him alive underground. Right in the village where this very exalted Brahmin lived. So, poor exalted Brahmin, what to do now? His very qualified son is now buried underground by the Kazi. Poor man. And so the man said, I have sufficient wealth. If anyone can find some way to relieve my son of this terrible condition, I'll give great reward. So one Kali Brahmana came. I've got just the mantra. Please, do what you can do. So he called down into the ground for Chanda Roy to say, you just chant this mantra, Kali mantra, and a tunnel will form and you can get out and everything will be nice again. And Chanda Roy said, just tell my father I'm okay. Not only I'm okay, I'm perfectly happy. There's no Maya distractions. No telephone. No computer. No video games. No distractions. The only thing I'm feeling sad about is I don't have the opportunity to serve Narottam. That's my only anxiety and regret. And when his father heard that, he didn't know what to do. He was pulling his hair out. Because now this was going on, the martyrdom of Chanda Roy was destroyed. It was making him even more famous than before he was put underground. The Kazi went to the Brahmin and said, how come you haven't offered me a bribe? That's how we do things in this country. So he decided, rather than just let him become a martyr and everyone glorifying him and getting worked up, he would kill him. So he made an arrangement. He exhumed him from the ground, brought him up to the surface of the earth, and was going to, like Prahlad, have him trampled by a wild elephant. And as the wild elephant was charging Chanda Roy, he just reached up, grabbed the trunk of the elephant, yanked very hard, and the trunk of the elephant came off. That's what the narration says. I'm only repeating. The Chan didn't know what to do. The Kazi didn't know what to do. He's a saintly person. You know, with this power, like Hiranyakashipu. And Chand Roy said, from Narottam, from my spiritual master. So he just let him go. Kazi let him go. And then all the other dacoit robber friends of Chand Roy went to take shelter of Narottam Das Thakur, similarly gave them initiation and purified them through the chanting of the holy name and his instructions and the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. From the association of saintly persons, faith can awaken. Even if one is sinful and abominable and bad, it doesn't make it easy if you're sinful and abominable and bad, but it's certainly possible. It's certainly possible through the association of devotees. So this is where there's some faith. These profiles of faith. So how do emulate Chanda Roy. We don't really want to do that. But it can tell us that within this, the process of saintly association, such an exalted person as Narottam Das Thakur, there's example after example. This is a very extreme example, but example, he was known for his compassion and his like mystical power to be able to deliver all types of people, wrangling, arguing debater people and simple people and fallen people, just anyone, everyone. The exalted nature of his bhakti was like that. So our ISKCON society, our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada is such shelter. And those of you that have not yet taken the disciple course will learn about the unique position of Srila Prabhupada as founder Acharya, although the present generation cannot physically associate with him, but the opportunity to associate through his teachings, not only in the present generation but future generations, is extremely important. Not take it or leave it important, extremely important for the, not only for the unity of ISKCON, but for the upliftment and betterment of the whole of the society that Srila Prabhupada created. So with that reposing of faith in our primary Shiksha Guru through his writings, how assiduously he endeavored to provide that means for us to cross the ocean of material existence through the boat that he left behind him after crossing to the other side through his writings. And one who takes shelter of those teachings will find it's true. The teachings, the writings are very, very, very potent. Someone commented after one of the classes that I've been speaking a lot about the Sundarbhas because I've been, Jiva Goswami's writings, I've been studying them. I'm studying them to prepare for at least one of them, but one leads into the other ones naturally to some extent. And from reading the Sundarbhas, I can understand better than I did before I started the study how Srila Prabhupada included these teachings already. He just didn't say, you know, Sanskrit terms. Jiva Goswami, he's Samarati, he does more. But otherwise, in Bhagavatam and other writings, without saying, you know, the verse and chapter of Bhagavat Sandarbha or Bhakti Sandarbha, whatever, he gives the pablamized version of those teachings. Prabhupada gave us these things already. And it's, you know, readily swallowable and chewable. It's a great, like an advertisement for Prabhupada's purports. Reading these other things enhances appreciation of Srila Prabhupada, especially if you already have some significant familiarity with Prabhupada's teachings. Then details are nice because details are nice. When our artists, when I joined the Boston Temple the summer of 1970, the art department was still in Boston, they had a little space upstairs in the third floor of a temple on North Beacon Street in Alston. You ever visit that temple, Pritchell? North Beacon Street in Alston? Okay. You joined? Oh, not only visited, you joined there. Wow. Me too. Summer of 70. Was the art department, was it the ISKCON, they had already gone. Okay. So when I went, they were still there. And it was, they did things that artists later on didn't like to do. They combinedly worked on one painting. So they would sit and listen to the latest you know, they would be the first ones to hear the recordings of what came in, Prabhupada dictating the Bhaktivedanta purports or Krishna book or whatever it was. They would hear it together. They would conceptualize which paintings they would make to illustrate the story or the subject matter. And then Bharadraj was the creative one, and he like drew what the painting would be. In his mind he saw it and he put it on the canvas. And then Jadarani came in and filled it in. And then Muralidhar was the one that did all the fine, the jewels and the, you know. And anybody that's done practically anything, you know, the details are what makes something very, very, very special. Like decorating the deity, or cooking, or painting, or writing, or anything. This-ing, that-ing. So the details of Jiva Goswami's writings in the Sandarbhas, it's like Muralidhar's making the detailed of, and that makes paintings, I don't know so much about it, but it's one of the things that makes paintings expensive, is the details and details. Right, just like carpentry or, you know, construction. China String is there. He does construction. So it's the finishing work that's, you know, there's the house and there's this, the frame and this and that, and then comes in all the details. Details and details. So Prabhupada gave us not like, you know, an amorphous presentation of the super excellent writings of the Goswamis. He gave it just in a simple, digestible form. And because we have that, then it becomes, my appreciation, it becomes easier. So he's our access to our predecessor acharyas, the present membership of ISKCON, and for some generations to come. And as he placed implicit faith in his spiritual master and thus became so empowered as he became empowered, on his behalf, place faith in his instructions and his teachings and his mission and assist him, and we can also become beyond our imagination capable of doing things based on that faith and the reciprocating empowerment that comes from Krishna for those who are faithful. Okay, so end there and see if there's any comments or questions. Yes.
I'm going to try to frame a little bit the question, Guru Maharaj. You mentioned in the beginning of the class about good intention, the intentions, and how also you mentioned in previous classes the examples of Krishna accepting the good intentions or the intentions, and even Srila Prabhupada also being able to understand the intention of the devotee. And thinking about also that, you know, in terms of oneself, you know, you try and try, you have the intention, but also the shortcoming or the condition that you can go over a particular, you know, obstacle. And it becomes like a recurring thing that it can go, you know, for years like that.
I'm familiar.
And also, remembering that you mentioned you have actually some say in your office, a little, you know, a quotation that says, you know, the world is something like the world is filled with people with good intentions. So good so trying to, if you can speak a little bit of how you as a spiritual master deal or see, this balance between the intention of the devotee and sort of like a I don't know if complacency is the right word, incapacity, or maybe not enough of intention, or how does that translate when you go on and go on and go on? You know, let me try. I would like to, but you can't, or you're not able yet to do that. I don't know if that's makes you know.
I think I know what you're asking.
You can probably frame it better.
Well, I might respond to something that you're not asking. That's part of the problem. But I'll respond to what I think you're asking. I was having a discussion with some devotees while here in Giranagari. And one of the themes of that discussion was, specifically to what you just said, something that comes again and comes again and comes again, and it's a rerun, and then it comes again and it comes again. Those are things that one should pay special attention to. I mean, life is important, but those things that happen again and again, there's something very special about those things that one should pay special attention to. And it's the transcendental factor is Krishna. If we try to do something with good intention, but without mindfulness of the person for whom we're doing it, and the persons who are guiding us, you know, the added spiritual strength to fulfill, but it keeps happening again and again, then that's where our attention should go, really. An intention and attention. The necessity for descending mercy. Like in the transcendental lila of Mother Yashoda trying to bind Krishna. She tried again and again. She was unable to bind Krishna. Not that she was lacking in Krishna consciousness. She was, you know, but she continued to try. And after some time, Krishna permitted. So when Krishna, with Krishna's permission, then it becomes possible. So what invites Krishna's permitting besides intention and repeating? It's our feeling of dependency upon Him, remembering Him and acting in that relationship while we're continuing to strive to our best capacity according to what we're intending to do to please Him. And part of the repeat may be, you know, Krishna's examining us, like it happened with Prabhupada. Nothing happened for a whole year. It wasn't something shortcoming on Prabhupada's side, but Krishna was testing his determination. And then, boom. Hare Krishna explosion. So that's Prabhupada, it's not necessarily us. We can think, perhaps I'm being complacent, perhaps I'm not understanding Krishna's wish for me, and perhaps I'm just like in the doership mentality rather than thinking depending upon Krishna mentality. And then, you know, something may, effort may for a short while and then fizzle. You know that one, right? We all do. That's anishta bhakti. So the primary response to your question that I'm offering is you can look for other possibilities, but in any case, strengthen the position of depending more upon Krishna and remembering Krishna and for whom you are making this effort to begin with. We're not liberationists or enjoyers. We're devotees, trying to be. Remembering Krishna and depending on Krishna for that he may become pleased. Okay. Something else? Yes.
Guru Maharaj, this is a question from your morning class. Is it okay?
Okay, sure.
So, I really liked your messages on simplicity and straightforwardness. So, one thing I was contemplating about was sometimes there is this desire to be simple and straightforward in our dealings with devotees. But then there is also simultaneously a hesitation to do so, to act on it, because we fear that we may be misunderstood or taken advantage of or judged or whatever it may be. So I wanted to hear from you a bit more on, you know, how to address that, you know, how to overcome the barrier, this fear.
Okay. I was thinking some more as you were asking your question about Subal's question from this morning, the difference between discrimination and diplomacy and the bad kind. So the proper kind of discrimination, what the term simplicity addresses is not for your own, not concealing something that may expose you, as opposed, you know, and therefore manipulating, telling half-truths because it may be disadvantageous to you. But the compassionate side is, with discrimination, what is actually going to be beneficial for the other person? Now, you're asking a different question, which is hesitation because I may be misunderstood or I may be judged or something. So we want to be effective, and one of the ways that invites being ineffective is we don't open our hearts and, you know, I may get hurt, it's about me, as opposed to effective communication, you know, a transparent transaction. So being not sufficiently, put it in simple terms, Krishna conscious, we may need that little space where we're protecting, but it's something, it's like that, those verses 27 and 28 from chapter 20 of Canto 11 went along with that presentation, where I may recognize I have this attachment, I want to feel safe. Although it's not really the position of safety, because the real position of safety is Krishna is my protector. But I'm not there yet. I know that Krishna is my protector, but I'm not there yet because I have this other attachment of I need my own little safety space just in case. Just because it's my, whatever the right term would be, my material conditioning. My lack of Krishna consciousness, I'm not sufficiently developed in Krishna consciousness. So stay in that, it's not fully there yet, but I'm not fully there yet. And I know what the difference is. And as I can become feeling the shelter and protection of Krishna, then I can go there and I can expose myself. And even if I'm judged, it doesn't hurt. I mean, it's that I'm not hurt because there's my relationship with Guru and Krishna, and that's all I need. If somehow I can be of service with another person, not just tell it like it is, man, but, you know, like in that kind of a spirit, but be in the mood of service, then even I may be misunderstood. You know, I will try to evaluate in a discriminating way, is it going to be well received or not well received? Because I want to be in the mood of service, not just telling it like it is, man, but in the mood of service. So it's effective. It actually serves to elevate, or, you know, can move things towards the elevated position. So much of that depends upon super soul and the relationship and one's feeling secure in one's relationship with Guru and Krishna. So I can go out on that limb and it's okay. These are all subtle things. You know, it's different for each person according to our, where we are in our spiritual trajectory. But so even if we, so once again, if we're in that place where we're, we can, if it's due to, I don't think my position of service is such that I can be of benefit, it may be of detriment to the other person. Or even to the relationship, in detriment to the relationship, then I may, but then it's look within, not finger point without, say, if I was more qualified spiritually, so that's where the work is needed. You've heard me say this before, I regularly do this, just to check myself. If Prabhupada was in this situation that I'm in, what would happen? Would the situation go up, stay the same, or go down? Real easy to answer. And if I'm struggling, it's not because of the situation, it's because of my lack of Krishna consciousness. So where attention needs to go is strengthening my Krishna consciousness, not, you know, there's some problem over there with that person. And then I'm losing out an opportunity to become more Krishna conscious. So first we'll look within, and then those other checkpoints. Is it a mood of service that I'm in as I'm contemplating? Once that territory is crossed many, 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 many times, it becomes real quick, like driving a car. You know, when you haven't driven a car, it takes forever just to, you know, turn the corner or do parallel parking or whatever it is. But once you've practiced driving, it's you still have to be vigilant, but it's not the same as when you're first learning how to drive a car. So this same territory of these subtle things, just by being conscientious and sincere and wishing to please Krishna and be in a mood of service rather than something else, it helps a lot. Then you can navigate much more quickly, you know, going in forward in time. It happens, you know, very quickly. Initially, it's a little laborious. Something else. And back.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. The situation you were just explaining yesterday, you told, invest in that relationship more before telling the truth.
Well, that was in relation to Subal's question, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. It's not a universal, it's, you know, certain circumstances, that's what comes first before disclosure.
Okay. So, while investing in that, while strengthening the relationship, do we have to keep the problem aside?
Depends. Depends on the relationship. Depends on you and the other person and the relationship and the thing that you're contemplating putting in front or to the side. There's variables, so you can't, I'm sorry, I'm not gonna give a rubber stamp to that question. Depends. Just today I was having a discussion about this exact type of thing. And it depends on the, you know, same as our discussion, depends on the variables. But if the sincere desire to be good of service, even if you make a mistake, that can be overlooked because the sincere desire And being consistent in this sincere, humble desire to be of service. We make mistakes. Mm-hmm. But the Krishna factor is there and he can correct the mistakes. Don't keep making unnecessary mistakes. I want to speak of the intentional ones. Yes. Do you want to Jivana? You have something? No? Yeah, okay. We're going to give you two microphones.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj.
Okay. Go ahead. There's two microphones. I got confused.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There's three questions and we're done. One, two, and then three and we're done. Go ahead.
Guru Maharaj, I want to know, like, what are certain practical things that I can follow to cultivate humility? I think sometimes it's just not enough for me to know that God is great and I'm tiny. So, very practical.
Well, that's a good beginning. Understand, well, okay. Remember back at the very beginning of the class, I gave a reason why we're describing certain people based on Ramanujacharya. I like this teaching very much, so I'm just going to repeat it because it addresses your question. Listen carefully. Put the microphone down. You wish to develop humility. He wants some practical ways to do that besides understanding God is great and you're small. That's your question. Think of certain persons in our Vaishnava literature or our acharyas or something where there's personalities or contemporary persons who are particularly humble. And then hear about those persons. Speak about those persons. Remember those persons. Pray to those persons. Cultivate the mood of those persons. And as far as the quality of humility goes, there's so many to choose from. Rather than taking too many that it ends up in, you know, nothing. Select one or two or three very, very inspirational persons that have this quality of humility. And follow that. It's very effective.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. Your question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is from morning, if you allow.
Okay.
So when you were describing or explaining the difference between weakness and cheating, I remembered the line, I wrote it down. Sincere person may be weak, but they don't cheat. I've been contemplating on it and I just have a question that is it a weakness of the faith? One, number one, and number two.
F-A-I-T-H or F-A-T-E?
F-A-I-T-H.
Okay.
And number two is that is it correct that the way that I'm understanding it, that there are four principles that we have to follow and one of the principles is no intoxication.
Okay.
But then even including tea and coffee, for example, this is like...
Okay, for example.
But then, okay, let's say I know no intoxication. I know no coffee, no tea, no. But I take it. So am I weak or am I...
I'll go and ask Advaita Chandra. I think it's weak, not cheating. Just the very fact that you're bringing this up says it's not cheating. If it was cheating, you wouldn't bring it up. Right? You hide it under the rug. At all costs. Right? that answer your question? Okay.
Thank you.
Do you want to jiva? I've been contemplating this during the class about faith and commitment. Hmm. And I was thinking that sometimes, I wanted you to elaborate on the relation between the two, but also perhaps in the context of sometimes we see those who may join the movement new, pliable faith, but they seem to be very committed to what they do. They don't falter. And, you know, doing that, doing this.
Very committed to do what?
To whatever service they may be given. Perhaps chanting, perhaps reading Prabhupada's books, perhaps giving a particular devotional service activity and so forth. That their commitment is pretty strong. But we know those new generally have pliable faith. So there's two-part question, I guess. The relation between faith and commitment, and is it always that if there's commitment, and is it an indication of strong faith?
It's subtle, and things that are subtle aren't so easy to give a quick answer to. I mean, it seems just, you know, off the cuff kind of response, not deeply thought through kind of response. It's not just a Venn diagram where there's kind of overlap, it's like a lot of overlap. Because how can one make a commitment if there isn't faith? If one can't make a commitment, faith is weak. And then to make a commitment, well, faith may still be weak and then the commitment won't be maintained. So a commitment that's maintained means faith has become strengthened. Or by the act of commitment, faith may be strengthened. So I'd have to think carefully about, you know, the relation between the two. Not exactly, you know, which comes first, the chicken or the egg, which is the cause and which is the effect kind of thing. They're similar, but not identical, and exactly how they're different. I'd want to think about it some. Look up dictionary definitions and see how they're used in different contexts and those kinds of things. Radha Krishna, you have any thought you want to share on this?
I was thinking, if you have weak faith, then generally, like you said, they won't really have that commitment. But at the same time, there are people with weak faith, but they may do it because they're forced to do it. Or they feel that they are pressured into doing it, or they may just do it reluctantly. But still, it's weak faith.
And to add to what he just said, one of the stages of unsteady bhakti, anishtita bhakti, is utsahamayi. So you describe somebody that may be new and therefore their faith is weak and pliable, but they may seem very committed. To me, that's utsahamayi. That means it's not sustainable. They're committed today, and tomorrow they're not around anymore. Or after some time. But if they're still performing after some time and they need to be, okay, Prabhuji, now, you know, do a 30 degree right because that's what's needed next. And then they're to a 30 degree right because they have faith in, you know, serving Krishna. So then faith is strong, not just soft and pliable. It may be that somebody quickly comes again to that position from previous activities where very quickly they can do. I'm thinking of some individuals that are like that. Like all of a sudden, shoo, and they stay there. And then Krishna makes arrangement for association, they go, yay!
then they don't go, wait a minute, you know, it's, so it, it's, although they may be new, it may not be that they just soft and pliable faith for a whole bunch of time. It can happen very quickly, depending on their previous life. Is Parvarupa here? I'm thinking of this girl that joined his program at Northeastern University in her last semester of her senior year, Chinese girl. And after she grabbed a job, and Krishna arranged that her job in Hong Kong was 3 blocks away from where the temple is, so she could stay in the temple. And she wrote to me and said, all the Chinese girls, because it's a ladies' place, and they said, you know, you were a devotee in your last lifetime. You know, just like that. And some people, it's like really slow. So, last question, Jaina Sringa.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I was thinking, can faith and commitment be encouraged to be good?
Sure, not only can. We need it. We all need encouragement. That's why we come together. For encouragement. Yeah. He's feeling encouraged in his Krishna consciousness. I happen to know. By those that are encouragers. And you feel, wow, this is nice. Although you've been practicing Krishna consciousness for so many years in an atmosphere where that's encouraging. Wow. That's what we should be doing, encouraging one another. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.